Now, I know what you're thinking. You're like, wait a minute. I tuned in to listen to predictably drunk smart people talking about stupid things, but I don't hear the music. I don't hear the sweet sounds of Ross Baker doing his intro. Where's Matt to curse out people, and where's Sam to be sexy as hell? Well, first of all, relax. It's not that important. It's just a podcast. Second of all, we're about to get to predictably drunk, but where you are right now is in a commercial. That's right. You're trapped inside of a commercial. And why are you trapped inside of a commercial? Because Predictably Drunk, the podcast, now has sponsorship, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm here to talk to you about Amazon.com. Yes, that Amazon.com. They're now a partner here with Predictably Drunk. And now when you go to PredictablyDrunk.com and click on the Amazon.com link, it takes you right to Amazon.com and you can do all of your shopping like you always did. So all that stuff you want to buy for your beer, the beer steins, the beer glasses, the beer goggles, you can get at Amazon.com. And you can get there by going to PredictablyDrunk.com and clicking on the link. No hidden fees, no extra charges, just as simple as doing one extra click, helps out the show, keeps us free. So why not be a pal, be a good drinking buddy by clicking on the link at PredictablyDrunk.com and going to Amazon.com for all your shopping needs. Oh, and with that being said, here's the sexy, wonderful, lovely Ross Baker for the intro that you were waiting for.
You're listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux and Matt Somerville.
Predictably Drunk, smart people, stupid things. Once again, I don't know why I do the intro when Ross Baker does the intro better than I do, but it is myself, Sam Marcoux, along with Matt Somerville. How you doing, Matt?
Good, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. It feels like it hasn't been that long since we spoke last, but always good to hear your voice. First off, how's the kid? How's the family?
Oh, good. Fantastic. He's getting fatter, which
fat
is nice.
Fat is good.
Yeah, not too fat. You know, I don't want like a diabetes, as Wilford Brimley would say. I don't want a diabetes kid, but
this is why you're the Hollywood insider. You might be the only person on earth who knows that actor's name. Most people would say the old guy from Cocoon, but you know his actual name.
I always think of him as the Thing. He's the Thing from the Thing. He's the Thing. For anybody who hasn't seen the Thing, I just ruined it for you, but he's totally the fucking Thing.
Oh, I just thought I picture him as the old fat naked guy from Cocoon. That's what I usually think of.
That's terrific that's where you go.
Yeah, that's what I usually think of, old fat naked guys. This is Predictably Drunk. Here is what is on tap for this episode. We are going to be reviewing the best and worst movies of Steven Spielberg. If you guys are longtime listeners of the show, first of all, thank you. You know that we had a pretty controversial episode where we explored this same issue with Quentin Tarantino. It was one of our more popular episodes, so we figured why not capitalize on a good thing. And we're going to both praise and attack Steven Spielberg here in a little bit. Matt's going to take us through the timeline of good and bad movies from the great director. And we're also going to take it to stupid drunken news that has us in Vermont, lovely Vermont, where a drunk driver admits to playing Pokemon Go while drinking excessively. And as you could imagine, the results are not good.
Did he Pokemon Go to jail?
He absolutely Pokemon goaded to jail. Damn it. Go. Joke doesn't work on that end. He went to jail. Absolutely. We'll talk about that on Stupid Drunken News right after we talk about the Steven Spielberg best and worst of. But before we do that, here on tap, like we always do at the top of every episode, we do want to review what we're drinking and give you guys, our listeners, the best chance to purchase good beer and good spirits after you listen to this podcast. So, Matt, if you'd like to do the honors, what are you drinking and is it any good?
Yeah, let me take a sip. Let me, I want to be fair. I want to be just in my assessment.
Is this a brand new? This is news. This is a brand new beer. I heard you open it right before the mics went hot.
Yeah.
This a brand new beer that you've never tried before?
This is a brand new beer that I've never tried before. Correct.
Wow,
yes.
This is exciting. I'm excited.
So I'm gonna sip. Here we go.
That is a very loud sip.
I wasn't sure what's gonna pick up or not, so I sipped loud as shit.
Yeah.
This is the Ballast Point Pineapple Sculpin. Now, we've talked about fruit beers on this show before, and we've had good things to say about them. We've had bad things to say about them. I think the consensus is if you need to add fruit to your beer, fuck that beer. But if you don't need to add fruit because there's enough fruit in the beer itself, while still being a beer. Okay, fine, great. I've had some terrific fruit beers before, and this is not one of them.
Ooh.
This is an IPA, first of all, and you know, I will still drink IPAs.
Yeah, you're big on IPAs. That is absolutely true. And this is a first. This is it sounds like your first impression of Ballast Point Grapefruit IPA, which is a pretty
pineapple
IPA. Grapefruit's one of their more popular ones. The pineapple IPA is not a good one so far.
I don't taste the fucking pineapple for anything.
Well, that's a problem.
I think that first taste, you get a little bit of the pineapple. It's quickly washed up by the taste of IPA, which, like you said, I drink IPAs, but it's not my favorite. I'll be honest. IPAs are not my favorite. Every IPA has that same IPA taste, and unfortunately, for fruit beers, for sort of specialty themed tasting beers, that IPA taste just washes away the pineapple.
Now, Ballast Point is one of the more popular microbreweries here in California, based basically out of the San Diego area, which is a huge area for microbrewing. They are one of the largest advertising microbrews that I've seen. In fact, a couple episodes ago, you heard me talking about Drake's and how they were oversaturated on the HBO show Silicon Valley. Well, the other beer company on that show that's just all over it, that smears their beer feces all over that show, is Ballast Point. I happen to know some friends of mine who work for Ballast Point. I enjoy the majority of their beer, but I can see IPAs are a little bit tricky. You almost have to embrace, like you said, you almost have to embrace the taste of IPA and say, screw it, we're going to make just a solid down-the-middle IPA with IPA flavors, as opposed to trying to infuse it with all these different things. Like, it's a good attempt, but it's almost like adding pineapple to the pizza. It's like, I'd rather just have the pizza as opposed to pineapple on the pizza.
Yeah, I think your touches on IPA have to be very subtle in one way or the other, in one direction or the other. You can't go so extreme as to say this shit's going to taste like pineapple, because it doesn't. It just doesn't.
Yeah, so pretty much sounds like you're not giving this a really good recommendation.
It's a thumbs down. It's a thumbs down. Now, hopefully you can pull us out of the depths here. What are you sipping on tonight?
Well, ironically enough, I was a big IPA hophead for a long time, and I kind of went away from IPAs for a number of reasons. But I'm actually drinking an IPA tonight. It's an American IPA. It's one of my favorites. It's actually from the Bear Republic Brewing Company up there in Healdsburg, California, Racer 5.
Classic.
Yeah, it's an award-winning classic standard. It's one of the standards when it comes to craft beer and IPAs, especially in California. You know, I think this is one that puts itself up against the Pliny the Elders of the world.
Okay,
The double IPAs. Now, this is 7.5% in terms of alcohol content. And it's a beer that, in terms of, we were just talking about mixing and infusing fruit in, this is actually a beer that you can drink by itself. And you can also, what I've done a lot, speaking of Pliny the Elder, is something that I call a Pliny 5. And I think I've actually mentioned it on the show before. It's where you actually take a Pliny the Elder and then you float Racer 5 on top of it.
Jesus Christ.
And it sounds like, why would you mix the two beers when they're good, separately? Because sometimes that can go horribly wrong. Sometimes two very pretty people get together and make an ugly baby. Well, in this case, we're talking about, the Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie of IPAs. They get together and make gorgeous children. Right. And Pliny 5, which is Pliny the Elder and Racer 5 together, is an amazing mixed beer, whatever you want to call it, a blend, if you will, when it comes to beer. So I enjoy Racer 5 just by itself. I enjoy it mixed with other beer. And, it's just a good beer. It's one of those beers where if you're at a party and there's Racer 5, you're like, okay, there's smart people somewhere in this room.
Yeah. I have to try that now. Jesus, that sounds amazing if it really does work well.
Yeah, you have to be able to pour it right, because I think some people are kind of like, cavemen, and they just want to like dump them in together. And I think at that point, maybe the chemistry doesn't work. It's definitely something you want to float on top of. It's almost like a black and tan, if you will, but just with a Pliny the Elder and Racer 5 on top of it. And it's a solid IPA. I mean, that's what it is. It doesn't really make any bones about, oh, we're going to put you know, pine needles in it, or we're going to have a squirrel fart into the mixing process, and we're going to blend that in, or anything like that. Although squirrel fart sounds like it would be a good name for
fucking
a beer.
Love squirrel fart IPA.
Yeah, that's probably something that actually exists, probably in Wisconsin. If you actually heard our last podcast,
it's going to be Wisconsin for sure.
But I'm going to give it a thumbs up. I mean, Racer 5 is good. It's never bad. Put it that way. It's a very consistent, solid beer that I think you can get just about anywhere in the country. If you can't, order it, get it sent to you. And for the East Coasters who think you have a good IPA, get yourself a Bear Republic Racer 5 IPA, and you'll be like, oh, okay, that's what it's supposed to taste like.
And I should mention that even though you're not going to drink my beer because I said it was shit, it is 7%, just 0.5 below Sam's Racer 5.
Yeah, and I think they use like 3 or 4 different types of hops in this beer too. And I think that's what they did. They just embraced, hey, look, IPAs are a hoppy beer. We're going to just load it up with all kinds of flavorful hops, and we're going to bypass the fruit and all this other stuff and, stand on our own merits here. So solid thumbs up here from me on Bear Republic Racer 5 and Ballast Point Pineapple IPA from Matt. We got to go thumbs down.
Yeah, thumbs down, and Hoptastic, I think, is something that we should get Ross Baker to say for us, record it, send it to us, and then us have it so we can never use it. I was just thinking of the word Hoptastic when you said 4 different kinds of hops in your beer, and I was like, oh, man, that'd be a horrible idea. Just for half a second, it seemed so funny to me, and then my senses came to me, and I realize that I'm not drunk enough to suggest such a horrible idea.
It's not a bad idea. In fact, I was going to say it might make a good podcast topic for us to figure out what our actual scoring system is going to be, other than thumbs up or thumbs down, because that has been taken by Siskel and Ebert, as well as 87 million other people who review whatever it is that they review.
Roughly,
so maybe,
yeah.
But I didn't want to do anything corny, like I give it, you know, 5 beer caps out of 5 or anything stupid like that. But doing something kind of like Hoptastic or whatever, and having Ross Baker be the official, I guess, scorecard with his voice might be a good idea. I think you're onto something.
We'll work on it, and we promise it won't suck.
Of course, the problem is I'm going to have to talk to Ross Baker again. So fuck you for that.
Unfortunate. Yeah, God. That's not good. You don't want to do that ever.
No, I don't. But here's the thing. Speaking of thumbs up, thumbs down, I think it's time for us to get into happy hour here. And happy hour on this episode of Predictably Drunk is all about Steven Spielberg, arguably the greatest director in, I guess, film history. He's right up there. He's definitely in the conversation, if not number one. You guys know him from a lot of classic movies. He's also just an outstanding producer and just probably one of the best movie minds of all time. Would you not agree, Matt?
I mean, you know what? If you're in this country, and I'd be willing to bet a lot of other countries, you could name drop 10 director names, and most people, average Joe, will not know 8 of those directors. 2, though, however, one we've already covered, Mr. Quentin Tarantino, and tonight's topic, Steven Spielberg. You say those names anywhere, and somebody's going to know. Somebody's going to know who they are and what they do, and at least 5 movies they've done before. It's universal. He is probably even more than Quentin Tarantino, most known throughout the world.
And he got like a Lifetime Achievement Award when he was like 40 years old, which means he's probably going to get 2. The guy is just involved in, you know, I'm wondering how you're going to find 5 bad films from Steven Spielberg.
It was hard. It was hard. It was definite. I mean, you know what? Here's the thing about Steven Spielberg. The bad list was just as difficult as the good list for different reasons. The good list, obviously, it was difficult to just keep it at 5 because there were so many others where I was like, oh, this is such a difficult decision. And you like them for different reasons. And, both lists were actually much harder than Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino's lists they carved themselves out. It's very easy with him because I think he only has about 8 to 9 films under his belt. So, this Spielberg thing was definitely a harder list, but I managed to crank some out. So I think we should start with, the worst list, right? Or should we start with the, you know what? Let's start positive.
Let's start
with the good stuff.
And plus, I like when Matt starts rolling on the negative, because once the negative starts with Matt, it's very hard to stop that avalanche of hatred.
Sam just cuts my mic sometimes.
Yeah, avalanche of hatred should be the name of something that belongs in Matt Somerville's life. I like that phraseology. But I want to get the negative flow going, but we have to get the positive out first, because if we get the negative flow going, then all of a sudden we're not going to have any positive from Steven Spielberg. It'll never end. We'll just all of a sudden we'll be talking about directors nobody's ever heard of and how they're better than Steven Spielberg, because Matt's going to go off on a crazy rant. So let's start with the top five best films of Steven Spielberg's career. Number five. Yeah.
Number five, one that everyone likes. If you say you don't like this movie, you're an asshole, nobody believes you, and you're a distrustful piece of shit. It's I believe 1993, Jurassic Park.
Ah.
Jurassic Park, I mean, you know what? We all were aware of the existence of dinosaurs at one point, and we learned about them in school. You know, the 80s to early 90s saw films like Prehistoria, which, featured dinosaurs.
I've never this even heard was, of that movie.
It was a kid's movie. There were like three of them. It was like some
Land Before Time cut.
Oh, Land Before Time. Okay. But an animated thing, a cartoon. I mean, this was the norm. This is what we got before Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park said, fuck that. We're going to bring dinosaurs into the modern world, and we're going to see them with live action actors, and we're going to bring them to life. And that the second you see the first dinosaurs, I think they were brontosauruses. They hop out of the Jeep and the fucking dun 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 dun. Like, holy shit. You just get the breath sucked right out of you. All the characters in the Jeep are just shit in their pants. This is the moment that they've lived for, and now it's right in front of them, and it looked so good. It looked amazing, and John Williams, he's a G. His music just pumped it right up. Terrific, terrific movie. Can't really say that for the rest of the movies in that series, but we will get to that a bit later.
Well, I did like the fact that there was a humongous pile of Triceratops shit in that movie, too, because that was always my favorite dinosaur, and the fact that it made humans bury through the Triceratops shit made me laugh hysterically, even as a child.
Yeah, like, that was such a cool thing, that it's like, hey, wonderful dinosaurs, but also they're actual living things, and they poop a lot.
Dinosaurs poop, just like us, ladies and gentlemen. Number
Everyone
five.
Everyone poops.
So what is number four on the list?
Number four.
Okay, so number four is, I'm going to go with Saving Private Ryan for
Ooh,
number four.
That's a great movie. Great movie.
Yeah. Spielberg does he kind of does two different things. He does the movie that is for everyone, you know, kids and like family films. I guess we could just call them family films. And then he does this other kind of movie that is more serious. It's more directed towards adults, and it often takes a look at something that actually happened in our timeline, or in the history of humanity, and takes a very sometimes endearing, sometimes horrific look at it. And Saving Private Ryan was a bit of both. World War II was a very harrowing thing, really fucked up and violent, and preyed on the souls of many men. And I swear to God, I'm not looking at the back of the DVD box art for little blurbs from Gene Siskel. That's how I feel about it. It opens up and people are getting their fucking limbs blown off. I remember on that beach scene, the guy runs back to grab his own arm and like sticks it in his pocket for later use, if he's even going to get off of that beach.
It was good to have an extra arm.
Right. Well, he was missing one, actually, I think. So
hence why it's good to have an extra arm.
Yeah, I guess if you're one-armed, then any arms additionally are extra.
Is there such a thing as a method director? Like, I know what a method actor is, but the reason I ask that is I actually, speaking of this movie, just read something the other day on the internet, so I know it's true. Okay. But I actually read that Steven Spielberg made the entire staff, meaning all the actors, all the talent, go through like basic training. And get in through training, except for Matt Damon, who played Private Ryan. And the reason was, is he wanted the actors to have an actual resentment towards Matt Damon and his character, which is definitely comes through on the screen. I mean, all these people are dying to save one guy, and that's kind of the overarching theme of this entire movie, is this kid better be worth it, right? Because we're losing our brothers left and right. Is that true? Is that a true story?
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah. Put everyone through the ringer. You know, all the, like, even the guys that you see for 5 seconds, like Ted Danson or Vin Diesel, I mean, they all had to go through it. And I think it was smart of him to create that separation between everyone else and the titular guy that they're all risking their lives to save and die for. A lot of them die for him. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, it's been out for fucking roughly 30 millenniums, so fuck you. Appropriately violent, as the war was, and super meaningful and super emotional and terrifically led by one Sir Tom Hanks.
Oh, Tom Hanks is my favorite actor of all time, and Steven Spielberg. The only issue I have with this on the list is that I think it seems a little low. I mean, it is a great movie, and I know he's got a lot of movies under his belt, under his name, but I can't imagine there's three better movies than Saving Private Ryan. But I guess you're gonna start with the next one to prove me wrong. So, what is number three on the greatest Steven Spielberg list of all time?
Number three.
I don't remember that one. Was that an early work?
That was the goddamn Ballast Point. I think how the order comes down. Like I said, it's a difficult list to make because there are way more than five good Spielberg movies. I think the order of these really comes down to personal preference.
Well, it is your show, so you do get the ability to have your personal preference.
Thank God you finally admitted it. So my next one, and this is, again, coming down to personal preference and what the stuff means to me, Hook. Hook is number three.
Wow, I think I disagree with you.
Oh, do you? Okay, all right. Well, hold on. Let me speak my piece, and then you can tell me why I'm wrong. Hook, again, you know, John Williams. I don't know if John Williams does every single movie that Spielberg does, but he very notably did this and at least one other on the good list I have here. It's just a tremendous, again, the modernization. He takes these basic ideas or ideas that have existed before and modernizes them and does so in a terrifically charming and delightful fashion. And Hook is very much that. Everybody knows the story of Peter Pan. If you're a kid and you grew up, you know, in the, I honestly don't even know when the animated one came out, but that had to be like the 60s.
I want to say the 60s.
Right?
That's about right. Yeah. I think because it was in color, and color was invented in 1963, if I'm not mistaken.
You know better than I somehow.
By Professor Color. It was named after Professor Color.
Professor Color.
It's true. No, so you got to, you know, fucking read a book, Matt.
Okay,
and,
yes, sir.
So 1963, color was invented for the world and by Professor Color, and so it had to have been after that, yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that assessment. Everybody knows Peter Pan, and it's a great story. It had definitely more than one book, none of which I read. I was a lazy kid, and I watched the movie. But you know the story, and then he takes it in a way that a sequel wouldn't normally. Like if you had seen Peter Pan, the animated one, and someone said, Peter Pan 2 is coming out, it's not what you would expect. Peter Pan has grown up. He is a man of the modern world. He has a very busy job. He has a cell phone, even though it's 1991. He is a man who's too busy for his family, and the magic and the wonder of Wonderland help him bring that back and kind of show him what's important in life and that he's Peter fucking Pan and can fly and sword fight and crow, and there's fucking Rufio, and again, John Williams, dope-ass music, amazing sets, some of the coolest practical sets I've ever seen in a movie, giant pirate ships, huge Neverland sets. I called it Wonderland earlier, fuck everyone, don't pay attention to that, it's Neverland. Sam will edit it out, even though he won't.
Wonderland was really a good movie about the porn star John Holmes, though. That was a good
That's
one.
That's right. That was horrifying, starring Val Kilmer. But no, I mean, it was so cool because it wasn't a bunch of CGI bullshit. And it's I'm going to get a little soft here. It's just magical. It's pure magical wonderment. I loved it. I loved it so much. And I'll tell you this. I will tell you this. I tell you, I used to watch that so many times as a kid. I recently watched it for the first time in like 10 years. And I got teary-eyed, man. I brought tears to my eyes.
Wow, I don't know how we're going to get through this podcast. That review of number 3 was just as long as the movie. You know what I like in terms of things named Hook? I actually like the song by Blues Traveler Hook more than I like this movie. It's not a bad movie. I don't know how it got above Saving Private Ryan and even Jurassic Park, to be quite frank with you. I would almost take that to number 5. Without knowing what your number 2 or number 1 list is. And I think that's important. I don't know what this list is ahead of time. Anytime Matt and I do a list show like this, we don't know the other one's list. We do this just kind of off the cuff. We give ourselves an assignment and let the other one react to it. So just so you guys know, I'm hearing this for the first time, just like you are. And we are judging Matt negatively all at the same time. Now, the one good thing I'll say about all three of these movies, one thing that you see when you see a Quentin Tarantino movie, at least in my opinion, Matt, is that you are very aware that it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. The language they use, the type of music, musical cues that he uses in there, the type of filming that he does, right? The way he actually directs a movie. Steven Spielberg,
and the fact that Samuel Jackson is in all of them.
Well, I think he was also in Jurassic Park, if I'm not mistaken. So Samuel Jackson, very prolific. We may end up doing a best and worst of Samuel L. Jackson
at
some point.
We should. Yeah, he should stop.
We'll do that.
He should stop being in everything all the time.
Yeah, but it gives us so much to actually work with on a later episode of Predictably Drunk Smart People talking about stupid things. But the thing about Steven Spielberg for me, and you're going to see this even going forward, I think even when you get into the worst list, is that you aren't necessarily aware that it's a Steven Spielberg movie. You know what I mean? And they're just really, really good movies. Now, they're usually pretty long. They're epics, if you will. But they're very good movies, very, very much creates a universe that you get immersed in. That's about the only common theme other than maybe John Williams, like you said. But there's movies that people bring up and I'm like, I forgot that Steven Spielberg was involved with that. Like, you just know that it's a great movie and you're not, you know, a Quentin Tarantino movie it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. It's basically Quentin Tarantino is in, and then whatever, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs. Steven Spielberg has a way of making a movie and then just kind of walking away from it, making sure he stays behind the camera, if you will. So that's one of the geniuses of Steven Spielberg, I suppose. It also gives him credibility when he makes a shit movie to be like, that wasn't mine. And you would believe it because you're never sure which ones are his.
Okay, I guess that's true. Yeah, you said it, right?
Yeah. So number 3. So number 3 was Hook. Number 2 on the greatest movies of Steven Spielberg's career of all time is what?
Number 2.
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, see, I forgot about that one being him.
Yeah, that's him. One of the things that he partnered up with George Lucas on.
I was going to say, I thought it was a George Lucas movie.
It's not actually directed by George Lucas. It's directed by Spielberg. Lucas was just a producer. If I'm not mistaken, I could be, but I'm almost certain that Spielberg was a director on this one. By far the best Indiana Jones of the quote-unquote 4. I call them 3. There's 5 coming up. Who knows if that's actually going to happen. But
now, for the sake of the audience who doesn't know the movies like you do, Raiders of the Lost Ark is the one with the big giant ball, correct?
That's correct, yeah. You know what? I think with this new generation of people, human beings, I think that sometimes they know iconic things before they know the movie or the source itself. I think if you showed that scene to some kids today, they could tell you that they've seen that and they know what it is, but they've never seen the movie before.
Yes.
And I think that that's probably true of us when we were kids and some old asshole would tell us about some black and white bullshit. And we're like, yeah, the guy dances on the ceiling. What is that from again? Like, I don't, you know.
Final Richie, so, but
no, the correct.
No, also very correct. But you are right, Steven Spielberg. We just had our research team here at Predictably Drunk Studios look it up, and it was Steven Spielberg who directed Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Great, great. Okay, so I don't feel like a total asshole. Everyone hates Nazis, so there's that.
This is very true. Steven Spielberg very much hates Nazis.
very much hates Nazis. We'll get to that. But it's a terrific. It defines the adventure movie. He goes all over the world, and he has friends in low places, and more so, I think the thing that separates Indiana Jones from other adventure movies, like say like a Humphrey Bogart adventure movie, is that there's more of a personality to Indy. Like, he reveals that he hates snakes, and like older movies that are adventure movies would never do that. Like, the hero is always totally bulletproof, is so perfect, chiseled jaw, you know, gets the girl all the time, says the coolest shit. But and Indy is right up there with most of that stuff. But like, he's kind of a nerdy professor and he hates snakes. It brings some, it humbles the character a bit, and it really creates this rounded character that you really enjoy watching. And then all the action and the music again is terrific, and fuck Nazis.
Ironically enough, Harrison Ford, who played Indiana Jones, hated snakes in the movie, which in real life is probably the only thing that Harrison Ford actually likes would be snakes, as he hates humans and just life in general, from everything I've been told and everything I've ever been. He likes you, though. He seems to like you.
He does like me, which is miraculous. He's everything else. He's like, get off my plane. Give me my family back. Yeah, like, he just seems so miserable, but he was so nice to me, and I love him for it. I would love him if he fucking hated me, though, too. I love him. He's a legend. But that's my number two.
And that's a good placement. That's a very good movie. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Steven Spielberg, number two on Matt's all-time greatest movies of Steven Spielberg's career. So the big reveal here, number one, greatest movie of Steven Spielberg's life.
Number one.
I'm going to say one thing, and then you're going to say one thing, and then I'm going to say a thing after that. My thing, this is my favorite movie from my childhood, hands down. The thing you're going to say is your guess as to what it is, and then the thing I'll say is what it actually is, because you might not get it.
Well, the natural, you say childhood, you're a child of the 80s. Probably his biggest movie that people do identify Steven Spielberg with is E.T. the Extraterrestrial. That's probably the one movie that is, you know, Steven Spielberg's stamp. Everyone knows that as the Spielberg movie. So that is naturally what I'm inclined to guess is your favorite movie as a child.
And you're a smart man because you're correct.
Oh.
You got it. You got it. E.T., my mom was, I think, my greatest inspiration for becoming familiar with movies as a young lad. She, you know, she would just say, hey, you got to watch this thing. And I'd say, okay, you're my mom, I trust you. And she'd show me, and she was always right. I mean, you know, even in the early 90s, I remember she brought home Terminator 2, and we had rules about ratings in movies. I wasn't allowed to watch rated R movies, like, no matter what. And she brought home Terminator 2. She's like, you got to see this thing. And I'm like, but mom, that's our rule. Rated R is a no go. I'm 7 years old. And she's like, no, this is too good for you not to watch. Like, fuck the rule for today. You're getting to watch this because it'll make you a better person. And she was right. And so yeah, at a very young age, when I don't even know if I had the ability to say yes or no, she just put E.T. in front of me. And I mean, what, you know, again, with Hook, same thing with E.T. I hadn't seen it in a few years. I watched it recently about 2 months ago, and I cried like a little baby because it's so endearing. It's so, again, magical is the word. Like, magical is just a good word to associate Steven Spielberg movies with, especially E.T. You know, it took the idea of an alien invasion that so many other movies had done, and it kind of flipped it on its side a little bit, and it turned the alien which was presented as a scary ass alien at first. I will admit, there were parts that I had to make my mom fast forward every single time. It didn't matter if it was the 142nd time I was watching that movie. Mom would fast forward when that little fucking creepy bastard came out of the tool shed. And Elliot's there and he can't talk. It was terrifying for me as like a 3-year-old. But you know what? He turns it around. He is a loving, endearing character. And Elliot teaches him all these things from the 80s, his G.I. Joes and Reese's Pieces. This is a little fun fact. This is the first movie that ever featured product placement with Reese's Pieces. And just terrific, cool, loving, awesome 80s shit. Great music. John Williams again. The whole bike chase at the end, like flying. And it's just amazing. I love E.T. so much. And any child I have in the future, in addition to the child I have now, will be subjected to it over and over again, whether they like it or not.
To anybody else find it ironic that Matt Somerville, a Canadian, his favorite movie as a child is about an illegal alien coming to the United States and trying to make a home.
That's good. That's a great association. Wow. I am E.T.
You are E.T. You have glowing fingers and you're weird looking. So that is the list, the top five. It's a pretty good list. I disagree with a couple of them as we went through, but your top five in order, five to one, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, Hook,
yep,
Raiders of the Lost Ark at number two, and E.T. the Extraterrestrial at number one. That's a pretty good list. I think you can stand by that list and be proud of that list. I would, if I'm using those five movies, I would move it around a little bit. I probably put Saving Private Ryan at number two, Jurassic Park at number three, Raiders of the Lost Ark at number four, Hook at five, leaving E.T. at one. I think we would agree on that. Now, I think I like Saving Private Ryan better than E.T., but I understand the importance of E.T.
Did you ever go on the ride? Did you ever go on the ride at Universal Studios?
I did. And, you know, it was a monster. That movie's a monster. And that's the movie, again, that I think most people associate Steven Spielberg with the exception of one other movie that has not been mentioned yet. I'm curious if it's going to end up on the worst movies list. But that is the best movies of Steven Spielberg's career. But you guys didn't know that. You guys knew those movies. You're probably a little bit, your own order. But the worst movies, I think this is what people are paying their money to see here today on Predictably Drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things. So without further ado, let's do the countdown. The top five worst movies of Steven Spielberg's career. Number five, Matt.
Real quick, just a little variable. This is the only one, I promise. I've learned how to count since our last top, whatever I ended up making it, like our top 12 when it was supposed to be a top five list. There's just this movie that everyone hates of his, and it's actually one that I rather enjoy, and I thought it would be worth honorably mentioning here.
Sure.
And that's AI, Artificial Intelligence. It was this movie that Stanley Kubrick.
Isn't that the Sixth Sense kid? Isn't he in that one?
Yeah, that's correct. Haley Joel Osment is the star of this movie. And like I was saying, Stanley Kubrick was planning on making this movie before his untimely demise. Rest in peace, Mr. Q. Steven Spielberg kind of picked up the pieces and did his own version of it. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, long story short, it's a boy robot in the future who's created to love, and a family adopts him to love him and have him love them. Then their boy comes out of a coma, the entire reason they got a robot boy. And they're like, oh, fuck you, we don't need you anymore. And they leave him on the side of the road like a piece of trash. And he goes through life over eons, centuries and centuries of life, because he's a robot, he'll live forever, trying to figure out what his purpose is, because he was only programmed to love the mother of that family who's now ditched him like he's just shit, garbage shit. And it's horribly heartbreaking, but it's so interesting to see him go through the generations. And I won't give it away, but it's like if a kid just told a story and just kept going on and on and on, like, okay, and then he does this, and then he does that, and then he goes underwater, and then he goes a million years into the future. Like, all of that shit happens, and it's really creative and interesting. So I thought I'd mention that as a variable between lists. AI, artificial intelligence, I enjoyed it. I don't know if you saw it, Sam.
I have seen it. If I could give an elevator pitch as to what this movie is, it would be three things. It would be the book Are You My Mother, mixed with Pinocchio, mixed with 2001, A Space Odyssey. There's a little bit of darkness in there. And I am going to spoil it. The fucking robot dies kind of, sort of, at the end of the movie, except he can't die. So it's there's no mercy killing. He just sits there forever in, like, the ocean by himself looking for the meaning of life. It's a very dark, depressing end to that movie.
It's fucked up. Yeah, I loved it.
That was great.
All right. Okay, with that said, number five on the worst list.
Number five.
Number five. I'm going to go with a little movie that almost no one has heard of, probably, and that's called Always. I don't know if you've heard of this, Sam.
I have not.
Okay, so Always was a movie in 1989, taking from Jaws, the success of Jaws, and you know, that was a really hard one not to put on my top five best.
I have a list here of movies that were not on your top five that I'm wondering if they're going to show up on this top, or you know, bottom five, if you will. And if not, then we're going to run through them because
okay, we should. Yeah, I mean, that would have been top. That would have been number six for sure. But like I said, it's a tough list to make. Anyways, coming from Jaws is Richard Dreyfuss. He stars in this movie about a pilot. He's a cocky pilot. He thinks that his skill will trump all risks and danger of the job of flying a plane. But it's not. He's full of shit and he kills himself, not on purpose, but in a plane accident. Then the fucking asshole comes back as a ghost so he can mentor some other pilot and kind of tie up some loose ends from his life, you know, just in the way that you would be a ghost and be in a room where people can't hear or see you, but then occasionally talk about you because now you're dead. It's just such an asshole thing, like the mentoring ghosts. Like, fuck off with that. Like, it's just, why can't you just not be an asshole in real life while you're still alive and fixed your shit and your problems? Why do you have to die first to realize that you were a sack of shit? Like, why does that have to happen? Right off the bat, you don't like this guy, and it just keeps going, and John Goodman's in it. Like, there's just enough. Here's the thing. It's the most forgettable Steven Spielberg movie of all time. You hadn't even heard of it.
No, not even close. Even your description and the very well-known actors that you mentioned were in it, it doesn't ring a bell at all.
No. I mean, and there's even more. Audrey Hepburn is in it, for Christ's sake. And she wishes that that was not one of the last movies.
I was going to say, she had to have been like in intensive care or something for that. I mean, in 1989, she was on her last legs.
Yeah, there wasn't too much life left. And unfortunately, some of it was wasted on Always. So that was my number five. Moving on to number four.
Number four.
I'm going to go with a little film very early on in Steven Spielberg's career, one that almost entirely derailed his career in movie making. It's called 1941. Have you heard of this one?
Jesus Christ, I haven't heard of this either.
Okay, so this was a movie starring John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. And it's right around, 1941, Pearl Harbor. You know, you're familiar with that, at least. It's a slapstick comedy, sort of action-y, more comedy movie about pilots who are kind of going after the Japanese after the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Were they wearing black suits with sunglasses and a black hat? I mean, it's like Blues Brothers does World War II, it sounds like.
It's kind of lifted out of that, yeah. But they're wearing, you know, like the pilot caps with the goggles and the leather jackets. I mean, the thing about this is that it was this really crazy idea, but he had just done Jaws. So he was like, well, fucking, this guy can do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
he can do whatever he wants. And unfortunately, whatever he wanted was a little too far. He took it too far, basically. it was like taking those horrible, horribly racist propaganda posters from when the actual fucking attack on Pearl Harbor happened. And you would see like Japanese people on these posters with the giant buck teeth, and like the print on the poster would kind of enunciate in the way that a Japanese person would speak, like, sure, but in a really stereotypical racist way. It was basically regressing 30 years and bringing one of these propaganda posters to life. It was in bad taste. And honestly, he almost didn't get to do Raiders of the Lost Ark because it was a period piece. And so was 1941. And studios were like, well, shit, if you're going to do period pieces and you just did 1941, like, let's fucking avoid you doing period pieces about times during world wars, because that's just a bad idea.
And side note, I mean, I would say the vast majority of Steven Spielberg's work is World War II related type movies. So if that was the case and he wasn't able to do Raiders of the Lost Ark because he made some terrible movie, we wouldn't be having this conversation today. So that's kind of interesting. So that was number four, 1941. What is number three?
Number three.
So number three, I'm going to start attacking sequels. And I could be wrong about this again, but I believe there are only two franchises that he has decided to do sequels for. And one of those was Jurassic Park. He decided to go back and do The Lost World Jurassic Park in the late 90s. I think it was something like 1997, 1998. And he didn't get, like, Sam Neill, the star, he's the main doctor in Jurassic Park. He knew better. Like, he looked at Steven Spielberg, the guy who won several Academy Awards and made millions and millions and millions of dollars over the years, and said, I know better than you. Fuck off. I'm not doing this. And he wasn't in it. And Steven Spielberg's like, okay, let's bring in Vince Vaughn. Like, let's get him. That's the solution to no more Sam Neill. Of course, Vince Vaughn wasn't the main character, but the fact that he's in any movie immediately puts it on the worst list of any situation and any topic.
Although he was in Saving Private Ryan, which made the best list.
What? No.
Wait, what did you say? Oh, you said Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
I'm still stuck on Vin Diesel. My bad. Oh, sorry. Okay. That's right. You're right. Your Vince Vaughn hatred runs deep. I forgot about
Jesus.
This.
My entire life was about to unravel.
Matt just melt. You just heard a man melt on the radio.
Circuit broken. Jeff Goldblum, terrific character of Malcolm in the original Jurassic Park, but he was terrific because he wasn't the main character. He didn't have the pressure of being the main character. He could be snarky and very intelligent and snippety as a side character. It worked very well as part of a large formula that was Jurassic Park. As the main character, all of a sudden he has this fucking adopted daughter who does aerobics, and he has to be a great guy all the fucking time, and he's going after Julianne Moore. Well, he's already got her. She's the girlfriend, and she's just so fucking dumb. Like, she's like hanging out with dinosaurs. The biggest problem with this movie, before we move on to whatever number we're on, is that it destroys the idea that we were supposed to learn from Jurassic Park. And that was, let's leave nature alone. Let's not fuck with the natural order of things. Dinosaurs went away a long time ago. They're gone. They're not around anymore. Let's not fuck with trying to bring them back. Let's not play God. Here's the second movie, because the first one made so much money. Let's all go back to the goddamn island where all the dinosaurs tried to eat everyone. And they do that to the extent where they fucking bring the T-Rex back to the mainland. And it just tears the shit out of San Diego and destroys everything.
Yeah, it's like, oops, we forgot.
Yeah, like, our bad. And then it just gets way out of hand. It's very silly for a number of reasons, and should not be viewed by anyone.
Well, and to your point, and I have a feeling there's going to be another sequel that you mentioned here in your top two. But interestingly enough, on this topic itself, Steven Spielberg was actually interviewed recently, I think May of this year, and he said, my sequels aren't as good as my originals because I go on to every sequel I've made and I'm too confident. The movie made a gazillion dollars, which justifies the sequel, so I come in like it's going to be a slam dunk, and I wind up making an inferior movie to the one before. Which, thank God, he didn't make Saving Private Ryan again, because that would have been awful.
Yeah. And probably very inaccurate.
Yes.
I guess while we're on the sequel train, the only other franchise that got a sequel and another one or another one, like there were three movies that followed the original, was the Indiana Jones franchise. Now, the two immediate sequels, I don't know if they were all in the 80s, I want to say they were Temple of Doom and The Last Crusade. I don't hate them. I don't like them as much as Raiders of the Lost Ark, but they're still classic adventure movies.
I love Temple of Doom because that's the one where the dude is able to rip your heart out and then he pushed you into lava, right? That shit scared me as a child. That was a terrifying movie.
It was scary, yeah. And they had that horrible dinner with all the fucking, like, the monkey brains and the tunnel with all of the insane amounts of bugs and just the whole thing. Like, it was a weird, gross, scary adventure movie, but it was still so much fun. And Last Crusade had Sean Connery, and that was a treat. So you could have left it there. The time Steven Spielberg just has a listening problem, I think, because, you know, going off of what you said, he feels so confident. He thinks this is a great idea, but then other things come in the way and they're like, hey, man, maybe you should not, like Sam Neill for the sequel to Jurassic Park, or the amount of time that passed between Indiana Jones 3 and the pile of shit that is my number two.
Number two.
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. My God. Why? Let sleeping dogs lie. Let this thing be. You had a great trilogy. You pushed your luck twice and you got away with it. Why do you think you needed to do this? Harrison Ford is old as shit. He's out of his prime. Having Harrison Ford wear a shirt that goes below the neckline is just enough evidence that you'll ever need that this is a terrible idea. You just see all the wrinkles, and he's so slow and old. And then you got to bring in Shia LaBeouf just to kind of bring some youth to the movie. And there's monkeys swinging on ropes in the jungle, and then there's the absolute catastrophe of Indiana Jones getting in a refrigerator as a nuclear bomb explodes and him surviving because it was lead lined or what, like, oh my God. Like, and then that doesn't even touch the conclusion of the film, which has to do with alien skulls. Like, you were a little, you know, you were outlandish with things that you had certain elements in the first three, but at least those were, you could take them. You could believe them with a grain of salt. You could say, okay, this is an adventure movie. People can't really grab hearts out of chests. People don't really melt when they see something, you know. So it was just one step out of reality. This alien shit is leaps and bounds out of reality. And the whole movie was fucking offensive as hell.
Maybe they were E.T.'s parents.
Don't say that. Don't ruin E.T.
Maybe Steven Spielberg's entire universe of movies is one humongous universe, much like Quentin Tarantino. Maybe that's it. Or maybe he was just like, I don't know what the fuck how to end this, so alien skulls fixes everything and moves on.
Aliens. Just aliens, like that meme. Aliens. That's the answer to everything. So that's my number two. My number one...
Is this the one that's going to get us yelled at by historians?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you know which one it is, too.
I you know, if could I do the honors of actually announcing it?
Number one.
I forgot the name of the movie, so go ahead. No, I already forgot the fucking name of it.
Okay, well, see, my thing is...
Diary of Anne Frank.
That's not a film. At least not by Steven Spielberg, but you are onto something there.
Schindler's List.
There it is. Now, let me explain myself before... anyone gets angry, it's probably too late. Everyone's already angry.
Not everyone. I'm on your side on this, so go for it.
Okay, good. So I Indiana Jones number four, and I can't remember what it was in my best list, but one of my points that I brought up with Raiders of the Lost Ark is that everyone hates Nazis, and that painted the picture perfectly. It was great. There's nothing good to say about Nazis. There's nothing relatable about Nazis. They belong, now that enough time has passed and the reality of the situation has sort of softened into lore, real lore, but lore. That was great. It was just an adventure movie. It had horrible people. All you have to see is a swastika on somebody's armband. You know it's a bad guy in a movie. There's nothing else that needs to be said. They are a bad guy, right? Then all of a sudden, some years later, Schindler's List comes out and is like, oh, hey, Nazis, take a look at the Nazi side of things. And it's like, wait, no, I don't want to do that. And he's like, oh, no, hold on. It's going to be black and white. So that's, you know, it'll feel even more fucking depressing and harrowing and horrible. As if a story about fucking Nazis wasn't bad enough. And I think a lot of people see Schindler's List as a story about the people who had to go through these camps, and you know, obviously, ultimately end up perish because of them. But no, Schindler was a fucking German. Like, he was in Germany, and yes, the list, okay. He saved like 4 people out of 6 million. Like, let's not fucking praise that. Let's focus on the fact that 6 million people still died. Okay, let's not make a feature film about it where the idea is that you're paying money for a ticket to go be entertained by a movie. It's a horrible tragedy. It's very sad. So many times during the film, you are just so awfully uncomfortable. And on a level you don't need to experience. You can read about the Holocaust. You can have a historian tell you about the Holocaust. And you sit there and you say, that is the worst thing that could be done to a human being. That is absolutely despicable. And I just feel sadness about that whole period of time. I don't need a movie depicting it. I don't need that.
I remember when No Country for Old Men came out a couple of years ago, and everyone was praising the crap out of this movie. And I remember talking to you, I believe it was No Country for Old Men, and I asked you about it, and you said, yeah, it's a good movie, except, and you kind of delayed, which is odd, because you have an opinion on everything, especially movies. And you basically stopped and said, I felt dumber after the movie. I felt dumb because I didn't get it. And I went in, and maybe you poisoned me because I watched the movie after that. And it was the same thing. It was like this big buildup. It was going to be this great thing. And then it just sort of ended without any real satisfactory ending.
Yeah.
Which I guess it's almost like having a great idea and just not knowing how to finish it, but making it anyways. And I got what you were saying. That's almost how I feel about Schindler's List. I mean, put aside the fact of, you know, what was right and what's wrong. That's pretty obvious. The movie itself is, for me, it's so hard to watch, not because of the content as much as it's just a bad movie. And I know everyone says it's a great movie and, you know, it's historical and all that. I sit there and I watch it and I find myself doing everything I can not to watch it. And not because of it's too hard to watch because it's gruesome or anything like that. It's just because it's fucking hard to watch. It's like watching Geely. And this is where, from a movie making standpoint, I just don't understand this movie.
Right.
For Steven Spielberg, other than the fact that he's obsessed with World War II, he's obviously Jewish himself, and it's very painful for him, that entire topic, or at least psychologically, it's something he has to explore down many avenues when it comes to Nazis and World War II in general. So I get that. There's obviously something that he's working out in film, because if you think of like other things like Band of Brothers, which was on HBO, which was a fantastic...
great stuff.
Fantastic short series, which he was also involved in, also World War II, he usually gets it right. But I agree with you. I've watched this movie about a year ago, and I just was like, I just don't get it. Like, I guess I'm dumb because I don't get why this movie is so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at something like The Color Purple, which he also directed, I believe, in the 80s, and that was about slavery and those who had to deal with slavery. And that was, you know, it's something that's horrible, a horrible topic, but it really focused on the characters and sort of made you not relate to them. You could never relate to them, but it helped you understand things a little bit better in their situation, and it really made you like those characters. And it wasn't this morbid thing, like, oh, these people are going to fucking die eventually, so why do I even give a shit? It really just focused on the characters and the situations. And it was way more open-ended than the Holocaust. You know, it's the Holocaust. You know, what does that mean? You know what that means. You might as well not even look any of these people in the faces, because you know what's going to happen.
I had no idea that Steven Spielberg had actually directed The Color Purple, and I remember the movie, but what I remember the most is Oprah Winfrey playing Patty Cake at the end of that, or something along those lines.
Yeah. Which, Whoopi Goldberg, too, I believe.
Whoopi Goldberg, I think she was introduced in that movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Maybe not. She might have been in Jumping Jack Flash. I don't remember, but she was
definitely
definitely in the movie with Danny Glover and a couple of other people. Radong Chong, for example. But yeah, I believe it. Color Purple much better in terms of those types of depressing pieces that focuses on a horrible time in history than Schindler's List. And Schindler's List, I mean, I know it won like 87 million awards, and we're probably in the minority here, but I think it belongs on his worst movies list by far. And you know what? Number one is fine with me. So that is your top five best movies of Steven Spielberg, your top four, bottom five movies of Steven Spielberg, with the controversial Schindler's List on the top of the worst movie pile. And shit, what does that say about Steven Spielberg when his worst movie he's ever made is still like an Oscar award-winning film?
I know, right? Yeah, it was a tough list. It was really a tough list to get down. I think it changed a few times there, but I'm happy to say that I can stand by both of those lists.
Now, the most notable exception, I think, is going to be Jaws. We touched on that a little bit. You said it would be number six. However, when you had a chance to do an honorable mention, you went with AI as opposed to Jaws. So technically number seven on your list.
I guess that's true. I just saw AI as more of an in-betweener. I wouldn't see Jaws as an in-betweener between best and worst. I think everyone loves Jaws. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's iconic. I think it's great. I think it's very effective in what it does. And I that's why I never mentioned it, because AI was just the perfect in-between where most people hate it, but I don't.
Well, and with that, we will leave the genius of Steven Spielberg and go to the dumbassery of stupid drunken news. Real quick story here that just broke not too long ago. Not the most important story, but that's why it's here on Stupid Drunken News. Out of Rutland Town, Vermont. Vermont State
Police.
Yeah, that is exactly right. Vermont State Police say a drunken driver was playing Pokemon Go on his cell phone when he crashed his car. Officers responded to a report of a crash at an intersection in Rutland Town around 8:15 on Sunday. We are recording this on Monday, so this just happened. Police say 21-year-old Rutland resident Nicholas Caccia told him that he was driving from Chittenden to Rutland, Jesus Christ, Vermont, and had been hunting Pokemon with friends, which, first of all, bullshit. If you're hunting Pokemon, you have no friends. They say he acknowledged he'd been distracted by the game. Police say Caccia was found to have a blood alcohol content of 0.205, more than twice the legal limit of 0.08. That is a pretty good drunken driving spiel right there. He was cited on a charge of driving under the influence. A phone number couldn't be found for him. It wasn't immediately known if he had an attorney. How could you not have a phone number for him? He was playing Pokemon Go on his cell phone. By the way, he is due in court on August 8th, if you care about that. A couple
How
things about
he?
This story. 21 years old.
21. Okay.
Yeah.
If I might have missed that earlier. I guess it's a reasonable age. It was funny. I kind of made this joke the other day because I was at a pharmacy. I was just grabbing some medication and I came out and I'm paying for my parking spot in the parking garage. I hear the loudest noise just a few feet away from me. Some fucking idiot, I've never seen this before, just drove right through the arm at the gate, you know, the little arm that goes up and down. Fuck this, just fucking right through. It had no patience. He's like, I don't have any time for this garbage to lift up. Like, I'm going right through. I was like, and I think somebody else was like, oh, he must have been playing, like, he fucking saw a Charizard and was like, fuck, and just charged forward. He just had no time for real world things like gate arms, and he just shattered the thing. It just fucking came right off. It was hilarious.
The worst thing about Pokemon Go, I don't care if you want to play your nerd games. It doesn't really affect me in other way anyway, other than the fact that I do stand-up comedy, which means over the last 2 weeks since this Pokemon Go craze has started, every comic has some sort of Pokemon Go joke. None of them are funny. I hope this thing dies out. I hope more people crash their cars and die themselves so that this entire craze can go away. Unfortunately, I think I'm going to predict it right here on Predictably Drunk. We're going to see more of these types of games, and they're going to become more robust and more intricate, and we're going to have more problems like what we see here with young Nicholas Kachia of Rutland Town, Vermont, who was almost three times the legal limit trying to find Pikachu. The only funny Pokemon Go joke I have heard so far is with Abel Jaramillo, who has been on this show a couple of times back when we first started Predictably Drunk, and he'd mentioned that he was playing Pokemon Go in the Castro District of San Francisco and was looking for a Bulbasaur and ended up with a Herpesaur, and that was about the only joke that I heard. That actually made me chuckle a little bit. I was like, way to go, Abel. Good joke. Good solid joke that you won't be able to use in 3 months when this craze is done.
It's very topical, that joke. Yeah.
Very topical. But that's why we're actually talking about it on this show, because it's very topical. But yeah, drunken drivers trying to play Pokemon Go. I mean, if there's not a more dangerous combination getting behind the wheel. I mean, if this guy was Asian, that's the only other thing that could have made this worse. He would have killed us all.
That's a trifecta, yeah.
That is a trifecta of death right there. But speaking of death, we are over an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
I explicitly told Matt as we were recording this tonight that I had things to do in the morning and that we were going to keep this episode short. And it's now going down as one of the longest episodes I've ever recorded in history. So
that was the fast version, too. Like, that was me going fast, too. Like, oh, my God.
Well, I mean, look, it's Steven Spielberg. We bit off a big bite to chew on here. Very controversial episode of the best and worst of Steven Spielberg. You gave a negative review on a beer, which I think is a first here on Predictably Drunk.
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, of course, drunk drivers playing Pokemon Go. You got to talk about it. So that is the episode. Go check out predictablydrunk.com to find all the tour dates. While you're there, click on amazon.com, the link, and do all your shopping for all your stupid stuff that you would normally shop for, except for the fact that you went through the portal of predictablydrunk.com. It's going to kick us back a couple of dollars, so that we can actually, you know, buy better equipment and stuff like that and a couple of better beers, because the beer that Matt had tonight wasn't very good. So
I need help, yeah.
Do that. Go to iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on Stitcher Radio or wherever podcasts are found. And on top of that, you can find me September 1st at Cobb's Comedy Club. I'm going to be featuring there once again in San Francisco, California. But that is Predictably Drunk. Matt, anything you want to talk about before we leave?
No, just thanks for hanging in there in this incredibly long podcast, and I apologize to our listeners and to you, Sam. I'm truly sorry.
Don't apologize to the listeners. Fuck the listeners. They hung
in. Okay.
But thank you, listeners, for being there, and tell your friends. So
yeah. Unfuck yourself. You tell your friends so we can tell them to fuck themselves.
That's true. We need more people to tell to go fuck themselves. Mm-hmm. So tell your friends and spread the love. All right, everybody, this is Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Ross Baker, get over here and let us say goodbye. And until next time, keep drinking.
Bye-bye. You've been listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things with your host, Sam Marcoux, and that other guy. What was his name again? Oh, it doesn't matter. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio and find the complete catalog on predictablydrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking. Passenger, that's parasitic. I don't think that anyone